Mr. MacArthur, good morning to you. You may approach. We've got a couple of people coming into the courtroom, so let's take a second here. And you may proceed.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Brett MacArthur on behalf of the appellant in this matter. I would like to refer to this overrun. This case arises out of a motion to release bond in a criminal case. Mr. Pollery was the defendant. I was his counsel in that case. Mr. Pollery assigned the bond to me as payment for my services. After the case was concluded, I filed a motion to release the bond to me. The state had filed a post of lien subsequent to my filing the bond assignment, and so there was some confusion in the court as to where the bond should go. So I filed a motion, had a hearing in front of the district court. At the end of the hearing, sometime later, the court entered an order overruling my motion, so the money now remains in the court, and we did this appeal from that order.
Did the court determine that you did not have an interest in it?
There was no factual findings recited in the order. As I recall, it was a very short one or two sentence order that did not, as I recall, give a rationale to the court's decision or make any factual findings, so the answer is no.
So yeah. Is there a final order?
There is a final order in this case because the court's order or ruling on my motion disposes of my motion. There's nothing left to litigate. The court didn't raise any other issues. There's nothing else pending.
Didn't the court's order just say you can't have it now?
Correct.
Well, that doesn't mean you can't have it next week or you can't have it a month from now.
Well, I suppose if you're going to look at the strict reading the order, perhaps that's true. But I suppose then what I would have to do would be to go back and file another motion and have another hearing and just keep butting my head against the wall until something new happens.
Well, counsel, doesn't the court actually have to determine who the bond money actually belongs to before there's a substantial right decided?
Well, I would certainly think so.
But that when you say keep butting your head, somebody has to file a motion to determine who the money belongs to.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And what procedurally happened was I filed a motion to release the bond. We had a hearing, and really the facts not in dispute. I mean, the attorneys, we didn't call witnesses or exhibits. We simply just stipulated as to the time frame of when everything was filed, and I certainly thought that was, and I still think that's the dispositive issue. I think there are two facts in this case that are particularly important. I think those facts are not really in dispute.
I beg your pardon, but does the state have a lien on the money?
No.
The money's in the possession of the state, though, is that right?
It's filed with the court.
Could you garnish that money?
No, I did not. There's nothing there to garnish.
The money's there.
Well, the money is there, but our position is that the nature of an assignment is that it divests the original owner, Mr. McCullery, of any interest, and it's transferred to me in the assignment. Mm-hmm. So I think that's actually the second major fact that I would point out. First is the timing of the filings, and the second is what is an assignment.
What did the court do following the hearing?
Nothing. That was it. That was the end.
They didn't make a ruling?
Well, yes, the court issued a ruling, and it simply overruled my motion without explanation or any factual finding. There was no explanation. We don't know what the court's thought process was. We don't know why the court ruled as it did.
So
when you took the assignment, you stepped into your client's shoes, so to speak, legally, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you would have no greater rights to him, but no less rights, correct?
Certainly.
Okay.
Yeah, I would concede that point. And I think that's kind of what the state has tried to argue, is that they had some sort of superior right in time because that they had a lien on judgment. Certainly we disagree with that.
But the judge here has never been asked to decide, as between an attorney lien and an assignment or a child support lien, which is superior. That issue hasn't been presented to the court, has it?
It has not. And for the reason that I think that we are all in agreement that this was not an attorney lien, that this was an assignment. The document that I filed was an assignment bond. That's something that I think is very commonly done in the court.
Why isn't the state's argument that the state's lien for support attached the minute, at the time that the bond was filed, and therefore the, your client, who made the assignment later to his, to you, had nothing to assign.
And I think that's one of the pivotal issues, Your Honor.
Isn't that the way this case is going to play out?
Well, I think that that's a pivotal issue. And I think that our answer to that is that the law states that the child support has, once they have a judgment, they have an automatic lien to property that is filed with the county office. And so I think that's what the court's referring
well,
to.
Well, I'm going back to my other question. Is your position is the state has no lien, the child support lien?
They have no lien. They have no
they
lien.
Don't, you're saying they don't have a lien by operation of law.
They do not. Because the statute that I think we're talking about addresses property that is registered with the county office. That's the exact language. It's registered with a county office. And we've just say, look at the plain language of the statute. First of all, a court is not a county office. A bond is filed with the court, not a county office. Secondly, a bond is not registered in the same manner that a car would be, or a mobile home, or things that have formal registrations. A bond is filed, but it is not registered. There's
the clerk of the district court is not a county office.
I would say it is not a. I would say it is not an office for purposes of this statute. The bond is filed with the court. Now, the clerk's office may receive the money. They may practically receive it.
Does the record tell us whether the bond was originally posted in the county court or in the district court?
I believe it was originally posted in the county court.
But does the record tell us?
I don't remember. Right. I think it may have been stated by the attorneys in the hearing. I know that was discussed, but it isn't in the record. I think it was stated in court. And if there's a transcript, it might be in the transcript. But I cannot definitively answer your question. But to get back to the point that's being raised, I think what we have to look at is a court an office, and is filing bond registering it? Because unless the court, accepts the state's version of that, this is a simple matter of priority. Who was first in time? We were first in time. So what we look at is the two preeminent facts in this case are who filed their paperwork first. We clearly filed first. And what is the nature of a bond assignment? And our position is that a bond assignment in this case divests Mr. McCallery of any right that he has in that bond, and he had the entire right to that bond prior to.
And if upon filing the bond, state's lien attached to that money, he would have had no right to assign to you under that existing law.
That is correct. If the court finds that a court is an office, and that a filing a bond is registering property, then we lose.
And does that also mean that if the bond by someone who owes child support is deposited with the court, the state never shows up to ask for it, and the court pays it back, person's acquitted, surrenders for sentence or whatever, and the court pays back the bond less the deposit, is the court then liable to the state is that employee personally liable to answer for that lien?
I haven't thought that far down the road, but I...
Well, I'm going to ask your opponent that same question, so...
I would say no. I think the state has some duty to assert any right that it believes it has, and they have some duty to act. And in this case, we acted first. We were ahead of them, so unless they can convince this court that a court is an office and that filing a lien is registering... It's like you register a car or something else. I think that you have to look at the statute 25-1056 and realize that this is not a garnishment, it's not a lien, it's not a lease.
How does one register money?
I don't know how one would register money. I don't know. I'm not familiar that that's done in our judicial system.
Does it make a difference if it comes in by check or by cash?
I don't think it makes a difference.
All right.
That's all I have. So.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cooper, good morning to you.
Your Honors, may it please the court, counsel. My name is Jason Cooper. I represent the state of Nebraska in this matter. Here today to ask this court to either reject Mr. MacArthur's appeal outright on the grounds of finality, ripeness, and standing, or if it reaches the merits, to affirm the trial court's October 20, 2016 order.
What did the trial court mean?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What did the trial court's order mean?
The trial court said that it would not release, the clerk should not release the funds to Mr. MacArthur.
Forever?
I don't think forever, no. It didn't say forever. It just said for now.
Didn't release the funds to the Child Support Enforcement Authority either, right?
It did not. It did not.
Said no change. It's not, the status isn't going to change.
Correct. To be technical, what the trial court's order did is to reject Mr. MacArthur's motion to release the funds at that given time. In effect, what it did was simply preserve the status quo so that there could be further.
If we get over the final order issue, you heard my question to your opponent. Is the state taking the position that any time a child support debtor posts bond money, and regardless of what the state does or does not do, that the lien attaches and thus a government employee who pays it back may be personally liable? Is that the state's position?
It is not, Your Honor.
So that means basically the state has to do something to perfect what it claims as a lien, right?
I don't believe so, no. I think that confuses the ideas of perfection with garnishee liability. I think in order for a garnishee to be liable, they have to be put on notice that they're in possession of property that somebody else has a claim to.
How does one register money?
I don't believe that you can register money, but I don't think the money is what's being registered in this case. I think a right to the money is what's being registered in this case, and you do that by the same way you register a bond, which is not a criminal bond, but a bond for the payment of money. You do it by the same way you do with a trademark or a patent. You simply file a document in an office that says, here's these funds, they're for this person, this date of birth, they're for this case number, et cetera, just by documenting and tracking.
Suppose that wasn't the defendant who wrote the check or handed the cash across to the clerk for bond money, but his cousin deposited it. And let's suppose that the paperwork didn't show it was the cousin's money. Lien automatically attached to that and under your interpretation of the statute?
Correct, Your Honor. I think what you have there is two opposing liens. You have a cousin who has a lien on the
money.
Well,
isn't, if it's truly the cousin's money, it's not a lien, it's their property.
Well, they've loaned that money to the defendant in the case. So just as where a bank would loan money to a defendant, I think that they do have a lien on that money because they've loaned it for the defendant for the purposes of his bond.
Don't we have to read the statutes regarding bond in the context of the traditional purpose of bond, that is, to produce the body of the defendant?
Correct, Your Honor.
So this isn't debtor-creditor relations. This is money that you're being provided in order that someone is willing to say, you release this person for X dollars and I'll produce the body. Right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Now, our statute happens to permit defendants themselves to do it, but it can be somebody else. And how does your, I just am having trouble with your articulation of this, how it overlays and fits to our bond scheme. I just think it's an ill fit. So try to persuade me otherwise.
I don't think so, Your Honor, because I don't think statutes permit another person, per se, to post a bond. They wouldn't have the authority to take money out of a third party's pocket who is not a party to the case. I think what they do permit is for the third party to loan money to the defendant who then produces the bond in his own.
Do you think every parent that's bonded out a child out of jail is thinking they're making a loan to their child?
Well, isn't that part of the risk that you take when you post bond?
I think part of the risk you take when you post bond is
you might not get your money back.
And isn't that why the clerk's office gives people a notice when they post bond for somebody else that when that bond, if and when that bond is released, it will be released to the defendant and not to the person who wrote the check?
Correct. And as a routine and practical matter, they often do give people that kind of notice. So I think that in that case,
so
it's the defendant.
It's your theory that when this money was deposited, the state support lien attached.
Correct.
And that after that attachment, then the assignment by the defendant to his attorney was an assignment, but there was nothing left to assign.
Correct. He assigned the rights he had in it, which were subject to the state's child support lien.
So is that does the lien automatically attach without the state having to do anything?
Yes. In this very narrow context, it does, because the lien was won in support of a person. And that is section 42371. It only governs liens which are for judgments in support of a person. So, yes, it did automatically attach. And I think the statutory scheme is full of exceptions for liens which attach for judgments in support of a person. The first-in-time, first-in-right rule simply doesn't apply when liens are in support of a person. Child support lien can be filed years after a regular lien and still take priority over that lien. The slew of exemptions for things that you can't garnish, such as pension funds or Army retirement, doesn't apply to liens which are for the support of a person. That's 25.
So I'm back to my question. Was there a lien? By operation of law.
Yes, there was, Your Honor. At the moment that the bonds were admitted to the clerk of the county court, that is a public office, a county public office, and they were registered, because to register means to record formally and exactly, enroll, to enter precisely into a list or the like. That's the Black's Law dictionary definition. And I believe it was a definition that Your Honor herself said in the first case it was before the court that register simply means writing it down, keeping track of for the purpose of the status of the property to outside the individual.
Counsel, the manner in which the trial judge wrote the order in this case that we're looking at, how did that order affect a substantial right in this case?
It did not affect a substantial right in this case. Substantial rights in this case would be an order that affects the subject matter of litigation by diminishing a claim or defense. The claim was strangulation. The defenses are those defenses that are always available to criminal defendants, such as self-defense. It didn't affect any of those because we are currently in the context of this appeal within that criminal case. I think the proper way to do this, as the state stated in its brief, would be to bring garnishment proceedings in the context of the defendant's child support case. And moreover, it didn't affect a substantial right, but nor was it final. To be final means to, in effect, an order that determines the action or prevents future judgment. And as the state said in its brief, not only does this not prevent future judgment, the order of the trial court on October 20th actually invites and welcomes future judgment in the context of garnishment proceedings, which is takes place. That would give the state an opportunity to deduce facts which bear upon the garnishment, that is, whether the assignment is valid at all, whether it was given for good consideration, whether it was a fraudulent conveyance. The defendant in this case had a public defender who was appointed to him. Even knowing that, he conveyed $5,000 to Mr. MacArthur at a time when he knew that creditors would be likely to garnish those funds. I think in a trial court proceeding below, the state would have mountains of evidence to unwind what is otherwise a fraudulent conveyance to Mr. MacArthur, bring it back into Mr. McClure's her to take possession and garnish the funds. I also wanted to discuss briefly your Honor's standing. Mr. MacArthur has added himself to this appeal without leave from the court below or without leave from this court. I am aware of no authority that says a non-party to a case can simply appeal because he has a financial stake in the case. I've cited cases in my brief. I'd also like to cite one more case to your honors here today, State versus Merrill at 273 Nebraska 583, where this court disallowed the state to take appeal in a criminal case in which the exact opposite was true in this case. In that case, the garnishment funds were released to the third party, and the state appealed within a criminal case, and this court said that that was inappropriate on finality. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, 16
seconds, Mr. MacArthur.
The state filed a notice of lien in this case, which seems to acknowledge that even the state at the time did not believe it had a valid lien existing in the assignment. The idea that this is a fraudulent transfer is nonsense. Somebody else posted money for Mr. McCauley. It was not his money initially. We'd ask you to take a look at the plain language of the statutes, and we think that that directs relief. This matter be remanded back to the district court with instructions to order the court to sustain my motion. Unless there are any further questions, that's all.
Thank you very much. That takes us to